Okay, we're going to begin here at the bottom of Yunud Bet, by the second set of two dots up from the bottom, which is Amar Rava Bar Machsia, Amar Rav Chama Bar Guya Amar Rav. So here we're going to have a series of memrot. This is kind of like brachot again, a series of memrot from this group, and they're not necessarily connected in any way, except the fact that they're authored by all by the same person. So first is, L'olam, Ayishane Adam Bino Ben Abanim. Person should not favor one of his children over the others. Shibishvil mishkal shnei snaim milat. Because of the weight of two sela worth of milat. Milat is either silk or very fine wool. Shenatan Yaakov to Yosef yoter mishar banav. That Yaakov gave to Yosef above his other brothers. Nitkanu boech of his brothers were then jealous of him. Vinitgalgela davar. And then ended up, vayardu abotenu to Mitzrayim. That ended up in a story that results in everybody ending up in Mitzrayim. So a couple of things to ask over here. Tosafot asked the most obvious question. Wasn't there already a promise to Avraham Avinu in Brit Ben Abtarim that they were going to be enslaved by another nation? Why is this the reason that you've been given over here rather than the basic reason that it's in Brit Ben Abtarim? So Tosafot says something interesting over here. He says, Afagav Debalav Hochi Nigzar. Despite the fact that this was Nigzar, irrespective of what happened here, nevertheless, Shemaloya Nigzar Lehem Inui Kokach. Maybe it wouldn't have been so bad. So what does that mean? We know that Ben Abtarim says that Bnei Yisrael are going to be in Mitzrayim for 400 years. We know they're not in Mitzrayim for 400 years. What do we say? It says, Geri Yezaracha Be'eretz Lo Lehem. The Gemara Seder Olam counts that based on the birth of Yitzchak. From the time that Yitzchak is born, until the time that Bnei Yisrael leave Mitzrayim. So we have periods of time where the Bnei Yisrael are not enslaved, but they're just Geri Ezaracha. So Tosafot says, you could have the same thing here. The fact is that they went down to Mitzrayim, and therefore they were enslaved in Mitzrayim. That's something that didn't have to be that way. It could have been Geri Ezaracha, like the times of Yitzchak and Yaakov. They were also considered a part of the Brit Ben Abtarim. So the nature of what the promise that happens in Brit Ben Abtarim actually will change depending on this situation, and this situation actually caused them to be enslaved. The other thing to note over here is that it says Shibishvil Mishkal Shneislaim Milat, which is a very small amount of cloth. It's really not enough to make a ketonet pasim. And we know that the difference between Yaakov, what he gave to Yosef and the other brothers, was that he gave him a ketonet pasim, which is a whole cloak. It's not just a little bit of material. So Rashi over here says, Lav Dafka. That can't be an exact number. If we're talking about a whole cloak, we're talking about something that's of significant value. Kanaka Batami De Rabbi Yitzchak Levi Matzatik Tone Pasim Saviv Pasyado. There's around the palm of his hand. Natan Milat. Velo Kolak Tonet. He did not give him the entire cloak, but he gave him the material around his hand. Rashi later on also, Rashi and Daf Lamad Amud Bet, you can see there, there's a Rashi, Devir Masko Pisat Bar also discusses it, that about being on the palm of his hand. Which is very interesting, that he had a silk wrap, or he had some sort of fine wool that went around his hands. The best explanation I've heard is that the ketonet pasim is an entire cloak, and everybody had a ketonet. What was extraordinary about Yosef's ketonet was that it was a ketonet pasim, and it reached at pisat yad. It reached until his palm of his hands. Shaul just mentioned now that maybe the cuffs or the sleeves were made out of this fine wool of silk. Well, what's the difference between having a regular ketonet that is short sleeved and a ketonet that reaches until the palms of your hand? So Rav Yoel Binun suggested that's the difference between being a supervisor and a worker. Right? The workers have to roll up their sleeves and they have to get involved. The supervisor doesn't do the work, he just stands around. And the cloak, and it's very true in their day, in that very hierarchical society, that the people who wore the cloaks and the long sleeves, that was an indication of someone who didn't have to work. And that was also someone who didn't have exposure to the sun. It was also considered to be someone of higher class because they weren't out in the fields working. So the fact that he had long sleeves was an indication from Yaakov that he was going to be the supervisor. And that's what we know. Yaakov sends Yosef out, go check on your brothers in Shechem. In that he was the supervisor, and that's what the brothers resented, that he was made into the supervisor and he wasn't one of them that had to work. And the difference being this small amount of material between having short sleeves and long sleeves. Alright, so now we have another statement from this group. Amar Rava Bar Machsia, Amar Rava Chama Bar Guri, Amar Rav. Lolam Yechazer Adam V'yeshev Be'ir Sheyeshivata Kruva. Lolam Yechazer Adam, a person should try to find and settle in a city that is newer, that is not so old. Shemitoch Sheyeshivata Kruva, because it's newly settled. Avonotea Mu'atim. It has less sins involved with the city. Shenemar. So this is actually related to this week's parsha, because we're going to see in a second. In Eina Yirazot Krova Lanu Shama, when Lot is leaving Sdom Ve'Amora, he's running away, and the Malachim tell him to run to Elahara, go up to the mountain. He says, do me this favor. I don't want to go into the mountain. I'd rather go to this place nearby, a place called Tzoar. Vihi Mitzar. So Mitzar, my Krova, what does it mean that it was close by? That Hine Ha'irazot Krova Lanu Shama Vihi Mitzar, close by and small. Ilema Krova Dimikarva. What does it mean, Krova? It means nearby. Vizuta. And it's small. Gemara says, V'haka Chazula. If you take a look at it, they would have known that that was the fact. I mean, that's not information that he's giving them. They didn't know. They're right there. They're opposite this city. So the Malachim obviously knew that this was a small city and that it was nearby. But why is he feeding them that information? So the Gemara says, Elamitok Shishivata Krova. Because it was newly settled, Avonota Mutzarim. Its sins were so of a smaller nature. It didn't have built up a debt of sins yet. So Amar Rabbi Avin, micro. How do we know that from the pasuk? Dichtiv v'malton hashama. Let me run there. So na in gematria is nun v'chad, 51. V'shel Sdom, and Sdom was settled nun bet. Now 52 years. And that is based on Parshat Noach. Parshat Noach, it says that Aver names his son Peleg. Ki biyamav nitpalgah ha'aretz. Because in his years, the land was divided or split up. The reference to being to the Migdal Bavel. After Migdal Bavel, the people were dispersed over the land. And Aver names his son based on that, a Peleg. So there are really only two choices. If he named his son Peleg, there are two possibilities of why he named his son Peleg. Is either because it happened then, and then his son is born. So when his son is born, he named him Peleg. Or the other possibility is that when his son died, that was the time that Nitpalgah Haaretz. So either he was named after the incident that's taking place. The problem with that his younger brother, Yaktan, already is there after Migdal Bavel, and he's named as part of the nations that split up afterwards. So that means his younger brother was already born prior to Migdal Bavel. So it can't be that he was named for the incident, because he's born prior to the incident. So the other possibility is it's the end of his life. The middle ground, which is also possible, is that it happened sometime in his lifetime. There, Seder Olam Rabba says, the Chumash wouldn't give you information where you can't do anything with it. If it's the middle of his life, we have no idea when in his life it happened, gives you no additional information. So rather, the Seder Olam Rabba says that Avery was a Navi, and he, based on his Nevuah, he knew that the end of his life, of Peleg's life, then Nitpalgah Haaretz. And therefore, based on the end of Peleg's life, when Peleg dies, that's when Migdal Bavel happened. Once you do that, how old is Abraham at the time? Abraham, if you do the calculations based on Parshat Noach, Abraham is 48 years old at that time. So Abraham was 48 years old at the time. We know when is Sdom Ve'Amora destroyed. The Malachim come to tell Abraham that he's going to have a child when he is 99 years old, that he'll have a child a year from now when he's 100. So Abraham's 99, and at the same time, the Malachim come and destroy Sdom. So from 48 to 99 is 52 years. So that's how the Gemara calculates that it was 52 years from the time that Sodom is founded until the time that it is destroyed. And they say that Mitzar is less. Well, less than that, again, doesn't tell you how much less. The assumption being that it would be the minimum amount that's less, and that's 1 year less, so that was 51 years. That's the gematria that we just said in Maltana, when Lot says, I'm going to run away to there, now gematria is 51. So that's the Gemara saying that Sodom was 52 years old, and Tzoar was 51 years old. Remember that when Avraham is bargaining with Hashem, he says, 50 tzaddikim, and then he works his way down, and Rashi brings Chazal over there that he was talking about the cities. Sodom was a metropolis. There were numerous cities there. There are actually five cities in this metropolis. And what ends up happening is, four of them are destroyed, and one of them is saved. Tzoar. Here, the Chumash does not tell us the names of the city. But, in the end of Sefer Devarim, it does tell us what the names of those cities are, which is Sdom Ve'Amora, Adma, Utzvoim, are the four cities that were destroyed. Tzoar is the one city that is not destroyed because Lot asks to go there. He doesn't end up going there, but he does ask the Malachim to save that city in order that he can go there. So then the Gemara says, V'shalvata Chavav. And Sdom had 26 years of peace. Now, that has to do with beginning of Parshat Lech Lecha, where Avram has the battle of the four kings and the five kings. Shtemisre Shana Abdu et Kardar Omer. For 12 years, they were in servitude to Gdal Omer. Shloshisre Shana Adu. So for 13 years, they rebelled. It's not in the 13th year they rebelled, but rather for 13 years, they rebelled. And then in the 14th year, they have the battle between the four kings and the five kings, and Avram defeats the four kings at that point, and then Sodom is left to be free. So if you add up the years, you have Shtemisrei in 13, which is 25, and then you have the last year, the 26th year, which is the 14th year of the rebellion in which the battle takes place. That's 26 years. Out of 52, 26 years were in this state of, I would say, war or uneasiness. Then the remaining 26 years were Bishalva. That's what the Gemara says. That
the first one is after.
No, that's the other way around. The 26 years of Shavar are the latter 26 years. First 26 years are
the war. Right?
And the war is all that time until Avram intervenes. Problem with that is, that Tosfos points this out, Seder Olam Rabba says, Seder Olam Rabba Mashmashaya ben Ayin Hei Shana Kashihikata Melachim. That Avram was 75 years old when he defeated the kings. So if Avram was 75 years old when he defeated the kings, we just said that area of stone was formed when Avram was 48. It gives you about 28 years. So Tosfos gives a suggestion along the lines of what you just said, Shaul, which is that the first 2 years is also Bishalva. That's the only way you can reconcile between Seder Olam Rabba saying that Avram 75 when this happens, and the fact that the 26 years over here. Otherwise, Avram would be 73 when he fought the Melachim in that case. All right, next statement from Amar Rava Bar Machsia, Amar Rava Chamar Bar Gvir Marav. Kol ir shiga gotea givohim mi beit haKnesset. Any city in which the roofs of the houses are higher than the shul, v'sof chorva, in the end it'll be destroyed. Shneamar l'romeim et beit Elokeinu ulhamid et chorvotav. Here the Gemara is drawing a parallel or connection between the two parts of the pasuk, which is the remain of Beit Elokeinu. When we uplift out the house of God, then lamid et chorvotav, and to repair or to fix the areas that are destroyed. So the Gemara sees a correlation between the lifting or the rising of Beit Elokeinu and the rebuilding of that which is destroyed. And the opposite would be true as well, which is that if the Beit Elokeinu is not the remain, is not the highest point, then it's subject to being destroyed. So hani mile bibatim. This is only true in houses. Aval bekishkushe ve'avrure leitamba. But if you're talking about the way Rashi translates kishkushe ve'avrure, are biriniot umigdalim. One of those are aesthetic buildings that are simply there for their height, for their aesthetics. Umigdalim are the watchtowers of the city. They do not hinder this position, which is that we're talking about, we don't want residences or even maybe commercial buildings to be higher, but if it's these small towers or the aesthetic parts of the buildings, that's fine. The way the Aruch translates Avrure is it's Avru Are, which are the Chumat Eir, the walls of the city. The walls of the city and the watchtowers, which would also make more sense, then you have things that are the security of the city, which are also the security of the shul, those are allowed to be higher than the shul. Amar Avashi, ana avde de Matamachsia, lo chorva. I ensured that the city of Matamachsia was not destroyed, he was the Rosh Hashiva there, because I made sure that nobody built a house that was above the shul. Where it says, var chorva. So when it says that it was destroyed, the city, so he says, moto avon lo chorva, that it wasn't that sin. That wasn't the cause of the problem. Matamachsia, when Matamachsia was destroyed for another reason. The other thing to note is that the shul has to be there first in order for it to be a problem. A person can't bring a residence above the shul once the shul is already there. But if a person built a residence, then after when someone puts in a shul, you don't have to destroy all the houses that are higher than the shul in that location. A lot of the yeshuvim are done that way because the way the yeshuvim are allocated their space, they usually have the shul at the center, at the top of the mountain. So the shul is usually the highest point. In cities, it's much more difficult. They don't do as well with that. The point here is not just simply, you know, the Gemara is saying something. It's a idea of respect and the idea of where you place your priorities. I mean, the Gemara here is taking it literally, but you also could take it in the figurative sense that the shul is the highest point of the community. That the shul, when it's the highest point, shows what's the most important part of the community. If you go to Gamla today, you could see that the city was built on the top of a mountain and it stretched down. So the wealthier people lived at the top of the mountain. The poorer people had to live down towards the sides of the mountain. Because the highest point in the city, where does all the rain and all the garbage goes downhill? So the poor get poorer and the rich get richer. I mean, they live at the top of the city. The same thing would be true of putting a shul at the top of the city in terms of giving respect to the shul and showing that as the priority and the most special point in the city is to have the shul at that point. So there could be some figurative meaning to that, not just a literal meaning. It's clear here that the Gemara is taken literally, but it also could have that figurative sense that the shul should be the center of the community and not the residence. There's a rule in Yerushalayim that no shul could be above the mosque, or that the highest point in the city was the mosque, and then the shul couldn't be above it. And it's the same idea, that this sense of the focal point of the city. To say that a shul can't be above the height of a mosque is to say that who are the real rulers? What's the focal point of the city? It's the same idea. Amar Rabba bar Maxi, Amar Rav Chama bar Guya, Amar Rav, Tachat Ishmael velo tachat Nochri. Better, this is very, very interesting, better to be under Muslim rule than to be under, as Rashi says, Edomim, which means under, would suggest over here, Christian rule, right? Christian medieval rule versus the Muslim rule. Tachat Nochri velo tachat Chavar. Better to be under the Christian rule or the Edomite rule and not Chavar. Chavar, it's here, it's not clear exactly what they are. Rashi claims that these Chavar were Umam Ibn Parsiim. They were some derivative of the Persians that lived there that were very difficult. Tosafot, on the other hand, says, Parsiim Hayub Bavel Mimot Koresh. We know the Persians were already there in Bavel at the time of Koresh, because Persian media overruns the Babylonian Empire at that time, and then become the central focus. The story of Purim and latter Nevi'im are dealing with the kings of Persian media, Koresh, Daryovesh, all those kings, not Nebuchadnezzar, Belshazzar, who are the kings of Babel. So that can't be the explanation, but rather these Chavarim, Bimei Rabbi Yochanan, not to the Babel. They came in the time of Rabbi Yochanan. It's very late that they came there. They're a time of the Amoraim, that they're showing up in Babel, a late addition. Then they were definitely foreigners or invaders that came in that were very difficult to deal with. And we have other stories in the Gemara with difficulties that they faced in terms of persecution and pursuit of Avodah Zarah. And that a lot of times the Gemara or the Rishonim will know that's this group of Chavarim that are the problem. Whether it's a rule on a global sense, or whether it's a rule where an individual has to work for these people and that they're in charge, it's also, you'll see from the latter half, it sounds more like these are talking about individuals than greater rule. But over here it says, Tachat Chavar, velo tachat Talmid Chacham. Better to be under a Chavar and not a Talmid Chacham. Tachat Talmid Chacham, velo tachat Yatom V'Almana. Better to be under a Talmid Chacham, not under Yatom V'Almana. So Rashi notes in the latter two cases, these are people that if you cross them, they're going to make your life very difficult. A Talmud Chacham, if he gives you a bad look, we saw before that Rabbi Yochanan can turn you into a galat samot, can turn you into a pile of bones, and if you cross the Talmud Chacham, then you're going to be in trouble. So if you're working for them, or you're under their rulership, then if you do something wrong, the retribution to you is going to be quick and forceful. And the same thing with the Yatom V'Almana, which we know that the Torah tells us that if they call out to Hashem, Hashem is their protector, and he's going to come to their aid. So you don't want to do something that will cause the Yatom V'Almana to be upset, and therefore your retribution will be quick and furious from Hashem. So that would indicate more that you're dealing with individuals. I think the same could be said about them on a global sense, that if they are running the cities, the rulers of the cities, you have the same problem, which is that obviously, as rulers, then you have to interact with them, and they could be difficult to deal with, or the retributions could be difficult if they are crossed. Amar Rav bar Machsia, Amar Rav, Chama bar Guri, Amar Rav, Kol Choli velo Choli Me'ayin. Any sickness and not a stomach ailment. Now, they're going to have a number of words here. One is Choli, then we're going to have Ke'ev, and then we're going to have a Michush. And all of these items are different types of sickness. Rashi translates each one of them. He says, a choli is choli aroch. That's something that is an extended sickness, a chronic or extended sickness. Then, ke'ev, huole chuba. Something that comes and goes. It comes in waves and then leaves. And then, michush, it's chash shabam. It's felt uneasy feeling at some point in time. And that's something that's continuous. So that's the list of items here. So he says, I'd rather go choli, below choli me'ayim. So any sickness, but not something that is a continuous chronic problem with the stomach ailment. Kol ke'ev, any pain. Again, this is a pain that comes and goes, below ke'ev leiv, and not heartache. V'kol michush, below michush arosh. And any temporary type of difficulty, but not a headache. So these are the things, giving you some sort of hierarchy. I'd rather not have any of these. Kol ra'ah, any bad that can happen, below isha ra'ah. And not having a bad woman over here, I'm assuming means a bad wife. That could cause difficulty because that's something that it's always there, it's always present. If all the oceans were ink, and all the small bodies of water
alongside of which the reeds grow
were either quills or writing instruments, and the skies were the parchments, and all people with sofrim were scribes, ain maspikim lichtov chlala shel reshut. There would not be sufficient from all that ink, that number of writing instruments, that amount of parchment, and that amount of sofrim, it would not be enough to write down on a regular day all the happenings in the world that Hashem is controlling. Mikra, what's the pasuk? Amar Masharshia, Shemaim larom va'aretz la'om umek v'leiv melachim ein cheker. From the sky above to the earth below, and the hearts of kings ein cheker. No one can discern or investigate or understand what Hashem does. The idea being that all the wars and all the thoughts and all the things that are going on in the world, Hashem's controlling everything down to the minutia, and there wouldn't be sufficient amount of ink to write down what's happening. And obviously Hashem is in control of all of that. We use a similar type of phraseology when we say in Nishmat, on Shabbat and Yom Tov. If you had all of these items, there wouldn't be sufficient praise in the world to give praise to Hashem for that which He does for us. Similar idea that's used. Akdamot uses the same thing also. A tanit. This is called a tanit chalom. Someone has a bad dream. Fast afterwards is good, like eish l'neoret, like fire to kindling, or is fire to something that burns quickly. This is the right thing to do. Amar chista bo bayom. You gotta do it right away. Right after you had the bad dream, you gotta fast. Amar Rav Yosef, that's true. Afilu b'Shabbat. Means that even though you're not allowed to fast on Shabbat, nevertheless, here, because of the, call it quote-unquote, pikuach nefesh, the fact that it's so efficacious to fast the day after the dream, then we're allowed to fast even on Shabbat. Problem with that, and we saw this before, is that if you fast on Shabbat, that's wrong. So then what you have to do is you shave tanit l'tanito. You have to fast again because of the violation of oneg Shabbat that you fasted on Shabbat, so you have to actually fast twice. Rabbi Shua b'reid idi ikla l'bei Rav Ashi. He went to visit the base measure, the house of Rav Ashi. Abdele igla tilta. They made for him a delicacy, an igla tilta. So here, Rashi explains over here, igla tilta is the third born to this cow. This is the third born calf, which is the finest of the calves. Rashi says it over here. Other places in Shas, Rashi says this and rejects this explanation and says igla tilta is a calf that's grown a third of its maturity. And when it's reached a third of its maturity, again, the meat or that food is considered to be a delicacy. So here it was a special visit that he was making, and they made him the finest food because he came for a visit. So they brought it before him. Amrulay litomar midei, come and have a taste, you know, sit down and have some. Says, Amrulay batanit yativna, I'm fasting today, I can't have anything. So then he says, Amrulay velosavrulay mar lahad Rav Yehuda, don't you hold to what Rav Yehuda says, Dam Rav Yehuda love adam tanito purea, person can borrow a fast and pay it back later. Meaning that you're not governed by that day itself. You could say, you know what, I'm not going to fast today, I'll make it up another day. So he says, Amalei tanit chalomu. No, this is a specific type of fast. This is not just a personal fast. This is a fast for specifically for chalom. V'amar v'amachsi, amar v'chamar, b'guri, amar av, yofet tanit l'chalom, keish l'neoret, v'amar v'chisu bo bayom, v'amar yosef filu b'shabbat. Meaning that the day itself is important. The fact that you fast on the day itself is important, therefore I'm not going to break my fast and fast another day because it's important to me to fast today because of the bad dream that I had the previous night, so therefore I'm going to pass up the delicacies that you are serving me. Then the last piece here, Amara says, V'mitchilu ein mafsikin mafsikim l'kriyat shema. The end of the Mishnah said that if they already began, not mafsik for tefillah, but mafsikim l'kriyat shema. Amara says, V'atani le'resha ein mafsikin. The Mishnah already explained that all these items you're not supposed to start. But if you did start in Mafsikim, you don't stop. And obviously we're talking about Tefillah because that's what the Mishnah was discussing up until this point. So why does the Mishnah come back and say again, Ein Mafsikim for Tefillah? It's redundant. It's not necessary. Where it says, Seifa Atan Ledviri Torah. The latter of the Mishnah is talking about something else totally different. It's not talking about Tefillah at all. It's talking about Divrei Torah, someone who's learning. Titania, Chavirim Sheyoskim B'Torah, those Tamidei Chachamim that are Asuk B'Torah, Mafsikim L'Kriyat Shva, Ve'ein Mafsikim L'Tefillah. They stop for Kriyat Shema, but they don't stop for Tefillah. They don't stop for davening. Again, one is Zmano Midoraita, one is Zmano Midorabanan. So Kriyat Shema, which is Zman Doraita, they stop for. Something that is Tefillah, which is Zman Dorabanan, they don't stop. Abrabi Yochanan, Lo Shano, is a very important qualification. Lo Shano, Elo Kigon, Rabbi Shimba Yochai, V'Chavirav, Shuto Ratan, Umunatan. That's only true of Rabbi Shimba Yochai and his compatriots that Torah is the entirety of their life. It is their profession, it's everything that they do. But us, and here it's Rabbi Yochanan who's speaking, like us, we stop for Kriyat Shema Tefillah. Now Rashi says, what is it that means like us? He says, well, we stop for our parnosa. We stop to do our regular activities. We do other things, and therefore, we should have to stop for Tefillah as well. So, if we mafsikim toratenu l'umnatenu, If we're going to stop our Torah learning in order to practice our professions, Kol Shekein Shenafsik L'Tfilah. Certainly, we have to stop for davening. If it's good enough to stop for our own personal professions, then it's good enough to stop for davening to Hashem. But you see here that even Rabbi Yochanan, who Torah Tov Munato, doesn't think that his Torah is the same as Rabbi Shimon Yochai, who, living in the cave, all he did was learn Torah. He had nothing besides Torah. I mean, that's the threshold here. The threshold that we're talking about here is something that's an extreme. To say that you're not going to daven. Tosfot asked, wait, we just saw previously, and yesterday's daf, about Rabbi Zeira and Rabbi Yirmiya. And Rabbi Zeira chastises Rabbi Yirmiya for interrupting the learning in order to daven. He says, how could it be? Why was he chastising him? This is Rabbi Yochanan says, I'm not qualified. I have to stop for davening. So Tosfot gives two reasons. One is either that it was Toratan Umanatan, they did have that qualification, or there was more time to daven. It wasn't the end of Zman Tefillah. Here in the Gemara, it sounds like they could opt out of Tefillah entirely. So the Tosfot brings a question, we're going to see later on in the Masech, on Daf Lamed Gimel, we have the story of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. The story of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, when he runs away from the Romans and goes to the cave, he wanted to preserve his clothing. So they took off their clothing and they buried themselves up to their neck in the sand. And then they learned like that. But when he had to get up to daven, he used to come out of the sand and put on their clothing to daven. Why was he davening? And over there, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is the classic example of Torato Umanato. So Tosfot answers here, how matzli hanu kriyat shema? That's what he was davening. He wasn't davening Shmoneh Esrei. He was davening Kriyat Shema, which is somewhat difficult because Tosafot and Brachot says when it comes to Matzle, Matzle means either one, Kriyat Shema or Tefillah. Matzle doesn't necessarily just mean Kriyat Shema. So Matzle is a generic term for davening, not just for specifically Kriyat Shema. It's a difficulty in the Tosafot here, but it seems to be that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai himself also did davening. And that might relate to what Shaul is suggesting over here, that this is only when there's sufficient time to do both. Then you postpone tefillah in order to learn Torah. Ber Halacha brings down, when we saw the items in the Mishnah, over there, if you started one of these items, you don't have to be mafsik if you have enough time to daven mincha later in the day, as Tosfot suggested on the Mishnah. That's even if you're going to miss minyan, according to the Ber Halacha. Meaning that if you started one of these items, and you're getting your hair cut, and because of that, you're now going to, you started beheter, and now you're going to miss mincha betzibur, but you still have time to daven mincha later on, might be that you do not have to stop your haircut in order to daven mincha betzibur, because you're granted the exemption here, based on what the Mishnah says. I mean, I wouldn't recommend it, I don't suggest it, I mean, it's nice to daven with the tzibur, and there are a lot of benefits of davening with the tzibur, but, mi'ikar halacha, it might be that, as long as there's time to daven mincha, you're not obligated to stop in order to go to a minyan. Va'atanya, k'shem she'em mafsikim l'tfilah, kach em mafsikim l'kriyat shema. Although we have a braita that just like you don't stop for davening, you don't stop for kriyat shema. Kitane ha'hi b'ibur shana. That's a different issue. That's talking about intercalating the calendar. When they have to figure out whether they should have a leap year or not have a leap year, when they sit down for that, then they don't interrupt it at all. It's a involved calculation, it's a difficult decision, and they want to have their utmost concentration on it, and therefore when they go up together, the seven people that get together to make the decision, then they do not interrupt it for any reason. The elders of Agronaya, when we were involved in dealing with the calendar in Yavna, we didn't interrupt for anything. We focused solely on that issue without any interruptions. A tailor should not go out with his needle close to darkness. We'll get to exactly what this means in the Gemara. But as I mentioned before, according to those Rishonim that say the whole reason that this parak began like a dead was because of this Mishnah. This Mishnah begins on Erev Shabbat. Starts to talk about issues on Erev Shabbat, not on Shabbat itself. So this parak is the first parak in Shabbat because of this Mishnah. The other two Mishnayot that we had beforehand are... We said either one's introduction, the Tziyot to Shabbat, to tell you that carrying on Shabbat's a problem, because that's what the issue is over here. And the previous Mishnah is similar in the design of the Mishnah. Lo this, lo this, lo this, lo yishev adam, even on chol, since the formulation of the Mishnah is similar, that Mishnah was also brought. So according to those Rishonim, now we're starting Masechet Shabbat. This is what was the reason that this is the first parak in Masechet Shabbat. Which is, lo yitzei achayet b'machto, so mokhleisha, a tailor should not go out with his needle close to darkness. Shema yishkach v'yetzei. Because if he continues during the time that's close to Shabbat, he'll continue, he'll forget about it, and he'll go out with it. V'lo alavlar b'kumuso, not a scribe with his quill. V'lo yifle et keilav, this is a different issue, a person should not pick out the lice from his clothing. V'lo yikra l'ora ner, and should not read by candlelight. And that we'll see later on, as Rashi points out, we're afraid, Shema Yateh Taner. In their day, when you had the oil in the lamp, and you have the wick coming out of the lamp, the more oil that was closer to the wick, it grew, the flame itself got bigger. So in the point where the flame is not big enough, you're reading next to it, or you're trying to do something that needs a discernment, and you want more light, what you're going to do is tip the Nair oil dish that's holding the candle in order to increase the flame and the light. If you do that, then you're in violation, according to Rashi, of Mavir on Shabbat. You're causing a fire on Shabbat, and therefore it's problematic. So we say, don't do this, because you may come to that. Be'emet Amru, they said, nevertheless, HaChazan Ru'ei Chantinot Tukot Korim. The Chazan himself can check where the children are reading. Rashi brings two interpretations here of what the Chazan is. One could be that he's the Gabai of the shul, and he needs to know what parsha they're learning the next day. So what does he do? He goes the night before, and he hears the kids, and checks to where the kids are learning. Because the kids were referring to the parsha. So he's allowed to look there, because he doesn't need a lot of light, number one. And number two is that he's not really reading. He's just looking where the beginning and the end, and where they're involved. Number two explanation Rashi gives is that the Chazan is the one who teaches the children. Chazan is the Melamed Tinokot. And he's checking out where they're going to start learning tomorrow. Where they're going to begin and end learning. Again, he's not reading where he needs discernment and he's going to be focused on the reading. It's just a quick cursory look at something over there. He's not going to increase the light for that. About who? Lo Yikra. That's the other side of this, that he himself cannot read. In both those cases, whether he is the Gabbai, he can't read from there because then it's like anybody else reading. Or if he's the Melamed Tinokot, he's not allowed to read. Even though the Tinokot could read. Even though the children could read. The children could read because Imat Rabban Aleihem. They're fearful of their teacher, so they're not going to touch the lamp in front of their teacher. So therefore they can read. But he, who is the teacher, he doesn't have any fear. And therefore he's like any other person and he might touch the lamp, so therefore he can't read. Diotsubo, we have a very similar type of setup. Lo yochol azav im azava. Person who is a zav cannot eat along with a zava. Here we're talking about a married couple. The zav and the zava should not eat together in pnei hergel aveira, because they might come to sleep together. And a zava is a surah in tashmisha mita. And therefore we try to create preventative measures so that they will not come to the point where they will end up sleeping together. So it's not atam. Lo yamod adam birshut yachid, bishteh birshut rabim. A person should not stand in birshut yachid, put his head into the birshut rabim, and drink there. Say the water is found in birshut rabim. There's a water fountain there. You shouldn't stand over there and drink from that side. Birshut rabim, bishteh birshut yachid. The opposite is true. You should be standing in birshut rabim and stick your head into birshut yachid and drink. Aval, im ichnis roshov rubo l'makom, shushoteh mutar. If he brings the robe of his body, as well as head into the other location, then he's fine. Because over there, we don't assume he's going to bring the water back. Our fear in the other case is that he's going to bring the water back to the location which he is in, and that'll be carrying. That'll maybe be moving from Roshut Yachid to Roshut Rabim, or Roshut Rabim to Roshut Yachid. Here, if he brings his whole body over, or the robe is by his head, then he knows he's drinking over there, and he's not going to bring it back towards him. Tosfot asks, wait a minute, don't we have a problem here, which is that, Im Tomar, Hashtanami, Ki Achnis Roshov Rubo Amai Shari, Why is it Mutar? Vaka Mafik Roshut Yachid Roshut Rabim. He's moving it from Roshut Yachid to Roshut Rabim. Why? Where's the water? The water is in the Roshut Yachid. Now he's drinking. Shalkeach Roshut Yachid v'nachid b'bit. No! Where does the water settle? In his stomach. Where's his stomach? On the other side. So why isn't that called Akira v'anacha? You're moving out of the Roshut Yachid into where your stomach is in the Roshut Rabim. That's what it says. Yesh lamar d'bliyato hainu hanachato. The Tosfos comes up with a position that swallowing is hanacha. When you swallow water, that is the anacha of the water. And therefore, since your head is on the other side, the anacha is taking place whenever the location is that you're drinking in. That may not be a problem, because you can't bring it back, right? Although, according to Tosafot, Tosafot says it is an issue, because it's the water's issue, not just the kli. All right, Rashi is saying the kli. I don't know if he means the kli and the water, meaning that the two come together. Tosafot clearly says the water is an issue, not just the kli. Tosafot then says, this is, again, over here, this is authored by Rabbi Meir, and we know, halacha ki Rabbi Meir, b'gzei rotav. Tosafot again says, this is another exception to the rule. We just saw that back on, remember I showed you that on Ted Amud Aleph. Halacha Gezeira Rabbi Meir, B'Gzeira Otav, and there Tosfos finds another Gemara here that's explicitly against this Gezeira of Rabbi Meir, and therefore again he paskins here against Gezeira of Rabbi Meir, even though normally we would paskin like Rabbi Meir when it comes to B'Gzeira Otav. And the important statement here is V'chein Begat. The same is true when we're talking about a wine press. So Yibailu, Carmelite Mai. What's the story if it's a Carmelite? Here we're talking about Rishiyot, domains that are D'Oraita, Min HaTorah. What happens if you're talking about a domain Midrabanan? What's the din there? Samar Abayi, hee. The din's the same. You can't stick your head over and drink, because what's the possibility? You're going to bring it. You're going to bring it, and you'll be in violation of a din de Rabbanan, of moving it from the Carmelite to the Roshut Yachid, Carmelite to the Roshut Rabim. Rav Amar, hee gufa gzeira. Vana nikum nigzer gzeira l'gzeira. He says, what do you mean? The first place, it's all gzeira. Even when it's in Rishut Yechid, Rishut Rabim, Ikar Din, you could drink that way. The problem is not the drinking. The problem is that you might bring the kli back, or you might bring the water back over. So that's the issue for here, which means that it's all a gzeira. It's all a preventative measure that's done by Chazal. On the other hand, so therefore, we have a principle, which is that ain gozrim gzeira l'gzeira. We don't pile up gzeirot. We don't say, well, if that's the case, we're worried about it. And now we have a domain derabanan, which is all because what are we afraid of with domain derabanan is that you're going to think that a karmel is like a reshut rabim, and then you're going to come to move from reshut yechid to reshut rabim. So now if I put the two pieces together, I have two gzeirot derabanan, and I'm trying to put them together. Rava says we don't do that. So Abaye says we do do it. Now, as Tosfos points out, Abaye only thinks that's true here when we're talking about hotza'ah. By hotza'ah, we do stack gzeirot. Abaye in general does not believe that we make gzeirot the gzeirot, or pile up gzeirot. It's only true here when we're dealing with hotza'ah. So Rav Abaye, minayim minala. How do I prove that to you? Diktani. So that's why we just brought the previous memra down. V'chein begat. My gat. What is a wine press? Irishut yachid. If a wine press is a rishut yachid, tanina. It was already mentioned previously. Irishut rabim. If it's a rishut rabim, tanina. We also mentioned, meaning that the Mishnah already mentioned in Erevin, Yamod adam rishut yachid, v'yishter rishut rabim, rishut rabim, v'yishter rishut yachid. It mentioned both possibilities. So, b'chein begat has to be another possibility, a third possibility. So, obviously, what's Abaye going to say? B'chein begat, my God, elalav karmelit. It's talking about a karmelit. So, that's my proof. The Mishnah says that karmelit is a problem, just like reshut yechid and reshut rabim.
And even though Rashi explained back on Chet Amud Aleph that a kli cannot become a karmelit, the Rabbanat were not goes there in that instance, over here we're talking something that's mechubar lekarka, something that's attached to the ground. The presses were embedded in the ground. And therefore, they have a shame rishut, a shame of a domain, not that of a kli, and that's why it can become a karmelit.
So Rav Amar, v'chein begat, klein yamaser. It's a totally different issue. Begat is an issue of maser. V'chein am Rav Sheshin said the same thing, v'chein begat, when we're talking about the wine press, is the inyan maser. Titnan, Rav Mishnah, both in Erevin and in Masrot, shotin alagat. You're allowed to drink from the wine press. Ben alachamim, ben alatzonein. That's whether you make it warm, you dilute it with warm water, or you dilute it with cold water. Upatur, and you do not have to take off trumot and masrot. The reason being that the way the wine presses are developed was that there's a large circular area where they actually press the grapes. They press the grapes, either when they stomped on the grapes, they do it with their feet, or they use these heavy beams and loads that they put on top of the grapes to crush the grapes. The wine that came out of there went down a channel. You can see this today. They have many of them around. You can even see them also with the olive presses. They do the same thing, which is that there's a small channel that comes out of that area where they press, and that goes into what's called the bore. The bore is the equivalent of a cistern, which is a lined area that's in the ground, where you collected either, if you're pressing oil over your wine, where you collected the wine. Until it reaches that point, it's not called Gemar Melacha. Gemar Melacha for the pressing of the wine is when it actually reaches into the bore. At that point, if you hit Gemar Melacha, you're chayav on trumot and masrot. Chayav on trumot and masrot because you reach Gemar Melacha, and therefore it's asur, not only in achilat keva, in taking a real meal, but achilat arai. Even a temporary meal, even a snack is problematic. Prior to that point in time, to take off trumot and masrot, to be fish trumot and masrot is only if you're koveya. If you're koveya sud on it, meaning that you're making it into something significant, if it's achilat arai, then you're not chayav in trumot umasrot. So therefore, here, shotim alagat, when it's in the press itself, the wine is still in the upper level of the press, then you're allowed to drink it and not take up trumot umasrot. According to the Tanakama there, that's whether you dilute it with hot water or cold water. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Elazar bar Rabbi Tzadok mechayev. Says, no, you're chayav in trumot umasrot there. Chamim omrim, alachayim chayav alatzonein patur. If you dilute it in hot water, you're chayav in trumot masrot, and the tzonein, if it's cold water, not. Mipnei shumachzir et hamutar. Because you can throw the extra back into the gat. The idea being, if you take the wine out, and then the wine's gonna remain out, because that becomes its permanent place. How do I determine that? Whether I'm gonna pour it back in. Would you take the wine that you drank and dump it back into the gat? Well, if you dilute it with cold water, you'd have no problem, you'd dump it back into the gat. Because it's no different than that what's in there already. What's in there already is pressed grapes and water. I mean, there's liquid in there. The problem with hot water is that it causes fermentation. And the hot water is problematic to dump back into the gut because it causes fermentation, or it could make it into vinegar, which would be the worst thing that could happen to your wine now. And so nobody would pour hot water back in. And so that's the distinction that they are drawing over here. That the shtiat arai is only when you're willing to put it back in. But if you're not willing to put it back in, then that's not called shtiyat arai, that's called shtiyat keva. That would become the end. That's the end game for this wine. And therefore you'd have to be mafrish trumot masrol, because you won't pour it back, because shemei yachmitz, because maybe it caused that fermentation to make it into vinegar. So that is what we're talking about here. V'chein begat. What is v'chein begat? Begat is that you can drink from the gat itself. If you lean over to the gat, or you take from the gat, you're allowed to drink. So that's v'chein begat, has the same din. The same din is that as long as you stay over there in the gat, then that's okay in terms of achilat arai. If you're going to take it away and not put it back into the gat, then you already reached the point of achilat keva. It's none. Now, this machloket the Bayin Rova, now we bring our Mishnah. So that's why all of this is located over here. Because of this machloket the Bayin Rova, first we brought the first Mishnah that we brought in the Gemara. Now we're going back to our Mishnah. It's none. Lo yitzei achayit v'machtos amuchlach sheikha. Taylor may not go out with his needle close to darkness. Shema yishkach v'yitzei. Because maybe he'll forget about it and go out. So my love, the tchuva lo b'bigdo. What is it? He's wearing it. It's stuck in his clothing. Well, if it's stuck in his clothing, it's not the normal way of carrying. And since it's not a normal way of carrying, the only restriction here is a restriction mi derabanan. So you have a carrying mi derabanan, and yet we have a gzera, don't walk around with it before Shabbat, because you might take it out on Shabbat. That would be a gzera, the gzera. So he says, no, the naki le biyode. He's holding it in his hand. Tashma, lo yitzei achayit v'machto atchuv alo b'bigdo. Oh, now we have an explicit braita that says he can't go out with a needle that's in his beged. Now it's not carrying it, he's wearing it in his beged. My la b'erev Shabbat, that braita is talking about on erev Shabbat, and that would be gzera like Abaye. Lo, kitani ahi b'Shabbat. That's on Shabbat itself. On Shabbat itself, where that only involves one derabanan, you're not allowed to go out with the needle in the beged, because even though it's not the normal way to carry it, nevertheless, because it's considered carrying midrabanan, you shouldn't go out with it. Erev Shabbat, you may not walk around with it in your hand because you may forget about it, and that'll be a problem. But to put the two together will be a gzera of the gzera. Va'atanyo, but now we have a problem. We have the explicit braita that says, lo yitzei achayit v'machto atchuva b'bigdo be'erev Shabbat im chashecha. So now that's explicit, that he can't go out with it in his baguette on Erev Shabbat. So that would look like gzera of gzera and supported by his position. It says, Amani Rabbi Yehuda, the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda, the Amar Uman Derech Umunato Chayav. A craftsman that carries, this is the way that the craftsman carries it, he will be chayab. So even though people normally don't go out with needles that are placed in their begadim, nevertheless, an uman, a craftsman, a tailor, would have the needle. That's how he carries around his needles in his beged. Since that's the normal way for him, that is classified as carrying for him. Titania, we have a braita. Lo yitzei achayit b'machtoach tchuva lo b'bigdo. A tailor may not go out with a needle that is placed in his clothing. V'lo nagar b'kisim shebe'ozno. And not a carpenter, but kisim shenos, no. Now kisim is usually a small splinter. Over here Rashi says it's a sargal, it's a ruler. Some sort of measuring, either for a straight line, or for the amount, but it's some sort of measuring or straight edge that he's carrying behind his ear. Velosurek, and not a comer, b'mishicha, with the bozno, with the string around his ear. So in their day, here it might be talking about a launderer. In their day, when they wanted to launder the clothing, they used to comb the clothing down to get the dirt out of it, and then they used to stretch it out between poles. They used to hang up the clothing, they used to scrape it down and comb it down, and they used to wash it or beat it down. So over there, he has a cord that he wears around his ear to tie the clothing up that way. Below gardi, b'iraj goes, no. And not a weaver. Rashi says it's either wool or tzemer gefen or cotton in his ear. So Rashi explains that they used to use the cotton or the tzemer gefen to plug a hole. If he put the weaver put the needle through and he doesn't want it to come back out, and he wants to finish it up later, he has to plug the area on the other side so it can't reverse itself, it can't come out. So he does that by placing the cotton or the wool there that will force the item not to be able to return through the hole that it came in. Below, tzoveya bedugma. And a dyer can't go out with a sample, shibitzavaro, around his neck. Below, shulchane, and a money changer can't go out, bidinar shibozno. With the coin that he keeps in his ear, or behind his ear that he carries around. V'im yatza, if he does go out with it, patur aval asur, which would be an isur derabanan, divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, uman derech umanato chayav. And uman, if this is the normal way that they carry these items, that's considered to be caring for them, and they're chayav. Shar kol adam patur. You're right, for anybody else who does it this way, they'll be patur aval asur, they'll be only isur derabanan. But for craftsmen, this is the way they carry. That's an isur deoraita. Rashi makes a very interesting comment here about these umanim. Why are they carrying their items in this way? So Rashi says this was early advertising. V'li nira shekol ha'shnuim kan enu ela shnotnim oto b'nei ha'umanut aleihem b'tzeitam l'shuk. When they go out to the marketplace, this is what they did. Kadesh shiakiru me'ezu umanuto. People recognize what craft he does. V'yiskiru ala malachan, and they'll hire him. This is a way to advertise what your profession was, and people would hire you. This wasn't that they carried the items in that way. This was their way to label themselves as that craftsman, and leaving themselves as that craftsman, people will hire them when they're out in the marketplace. They say, oh, wait, I need a weaver, I need a tailor. So that was a way of advertising. It's an interesting perspective that Rashi gives. Tani chada lo yitzei azab b'kiso. Zav, someone who has a mission, a zavi mission, v'im yitzei pator. And if he does go out, he's pator v'lasur. It's only yisudir banam. Tani yidach, another bright that says lo yitzei v'im atzach chayav chatar. If he goes out, then he is chayav chatar. It's nisudor raita. So the kis is a pouch, some sort of pouch that a person wears to capture the zavi mission that's coming out, so that it doesn't dirty his baguette, it doesn't flow all over the place. So he wears this pouch in order to capture the zavi mission. So the question here is, if he does this, he's not supposed to do it. If he does it, what is he in violation of in Shabbat? We have one bright that says it's only a violation of an Isu Durabanan, another bright that says he's in violation of Isu Doraita. So I'm Rabbi Yosef Lokasha, what's going to be the obvious answer? Ha Rabbi Meir, ha Rabbi Yehuda. We just saw that's the distinction between Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir thinks that this is an Isu Durabanan, Rabbi Yehuda thinks that's an Isu Doraita. So what, Tzvi looks at me, then credulously, what do you mean? So I'm Rabbi Abai, Imer, the Shmaile, the Rabbi Meir, Bimide, the Lav, Hainu, Orche. Rabbi Meir only argued on Rabbi Yehuda because he thinks that's not the normal way. Something that's the normal way to wear it, who would say that's only Yisud Rabbanan? This is normal way. Zav, who's having a mission, he's going to walk out with this pouch to capture the Zavi mission. That's what any Zav would do in this situation. That's a normal way to act. Why would Rabbi Meir say it's only Yisud Rabbanan? He would agree that's an Yisud Raita. If you don't say this, Hejot shechaka kav bikbikat. A regular person, not a craftsman, who hollows out or carves out a kav. A kav is a measuring cup of a kav from a bikat, a log of wood. So he carves out a measuring cup out of the wood. The Shabbat, the Rabbi Meir, Hachanami de lo mechayiv. You're going to suggest that he's not chayav for the Isur Malacha on Shabbat. Why? Because he's not a craftsman. He's not an expert. That doesn't make any sense. It's not just experts that are chayav on Shabbat. It's the malacha that's the problem. The actual malacha is the problem, not whether you're an expert or not an expert, or a craftsman or not a craftsman. The malacha, the activity is problematic. And as long as the activity is a normal activity, you're going to be chayav on Shabbat. So same thing over here. When you carry out the kis of the zav when he's wearing it, that's going to be chayav. That's a normal way that people wear it. The difference here is kan b'zav bal shtei riyot, kan b'zav bal gimel riyot. Depends on how many emissions he's had. So it says hark back to a little bit to tarot, to anita, which is that you have a zav has the possibility of having three emissions. A zav who has his first emission is classified as the same as someone who is motzi shichvat zera, and that he has tumat erev. He's tameh that day, and that day he goes to the mikveh, by that night he's tor. A zav that has two riyot, two emissions, over there, those two emissions make him into a full-fledged zav, and that means he has to wait shiva nikiim in order to become tor. A zav that has three emissions, not only does he have to wait the shiva nikiim in order to become tor, he also has to bring a korban. Skype a korban on the eighth day. So there's a big difference between whether you are a zav of two emissions or a zav of three emissions. So the difference will be whether he needs to know if he's already a zav of three emissions. It's irrelevant to him if he has another emission. He's already a zav of three emissions. He's at the highest point of a zav. He has to wait 8 days no matter what. He's going to have to wait 7 days in the kiyam and then bring the korban. If he's a zav bal shtei riyot, then he really needs to know whether he has another ri'iyah. So the pouch is important in capturing the ri'iyah because he needs to know if he has another emission. If he misses the next emission, he won't know if he's a bal gimel riyot. So the distinction Rabbi Amnuna is saying is, zav bal shtei riyot will be chayav, because he needs to know that he has an emission for his bidika. A zav bal shlosh riyot will not be chayav because he's not interested in the capturing of the emission because he doesn't need to know about it. So the Gemara says, wait a minute. Maishna zav bal shtei riyot. What's the difference between a zav with two emissions to chayav? He's chayav to violate the bidika because he needs to know if he has a third emission. A zav bal gimel nami violate the sfira. A zav that has three emissions still needs to know when he can start his shiva nikiim. He cannot start a shiva nikiim until he stops having emissions. So he needs to know when he stopped having emissions. So it's important to him also. So now, litzracha ela bo bayom. Now for that day itself, he already had an emission that day, so it doesn't matter anymore. It's not going to change anything. So the Gemara says, v'habi b'ayde shol kitan fu kelav. Doesn't he need it to prevent his clothing from becoming dirty? Fine. He doesn't need to do new for any count. But he needs to know it so that his clothing doesn't become soiled by the emission. Anything that is worn simply to prevent something else were coming dirty, that is not considered to be significant.
As Tosfot notes, even though this is the normal way to do this, anybody who wants to protect their clothing would do it this way, but it's only normal for someone who is going to protect their clothing. That's not considered to be the normal way of carrying it, because most people don't need to carry something to protect their clothing.
It's not. We have a Mishnah. This is a Mishnah Machshirim. As the Mishnah has been in Machshirim, it means it has to do with Hechsher the Kabel Tumah. And that is the Torah in Parshat Shmini in Sefer Vayikra tells us in order for food to accept Tumah, it has to first have to be Hukshar. It has to be prepared to be Mekabel Tumah. How does it become Hukshar the Kabel Tumah? One of the seven Mashkim, one of the seven liquids has to be poured over it, has to come over it. One of the seven liquids has to come over that item, and then it's Mukshar the Kabel Tumah. So now, the Torah over there says, Ki Itain. Now, when it says Ki Itain, Itain would mean to do something actively. But, over there, the Torah, even though it's spelled Ki Itain, the pronunciation of the Nikudot say Ki Yutan. Yutan is being placed on passively. The Gemara learns from that that it has to be Ki Yutan, Dumiya the Ki Itain. That when it happens passively, the Hekshe the Kabel Tumah, it has to be Dumiya the Ki Itain. Similar as if you actively put it there. What it means similar? You have to want it. So even if it happens passively, it has to be something that you want. So that's what the Gemara is talking about here, this Mishnah. Kofi karala kotel, someone who puts a bowl on the kotel. In bishvil shetudach hakayara, if you want to rinse out the bowl that you're putting up there, harizeh b'chiyutan, that qualifies to be water that can now be makshir the kabel tumah, because you wanted the water. You wanted the water to wash out the dish. Even though later on when it falls on the fruits or it falls on the food item, you didn't want that to happen. Doesn't matter. Since at first you wanted that water, that's enough. In bishvil shalol liyalakia kotel, you want it so that it protects the wall. You don't want the rain to fall on the wall. Eino b'chiyutan. That is not considered to be kiyutan because you don't want the water there. You're trying to prevent the water from coming. It says, mi dami. That's not comparable to our case. Hotam loka bayiluhu lahani mashkim klau. Over there, by the water case, the rain, he doesn't want the water at all. He doesn't want it anywhere near this wall. Hachaka bayiluhu lahai kis likabule beziva. Here, he needs the pouch to collect the emission because he doesn't want it to get all over his clothing. Over there, the guy would be just as happy if he didn't have the rain at all, if he didn't get dirty at all. On the other hand, when we're talking about this kis, he needs it there. If he has an emission, he wants the kis there.
And for Shabbat, that's considered to be chashuv in terms of hotza'ah. It's a significant item that you are taking out. Because over here, with the kli on the wall, you don't really want the water to come. Yes, you don't even have to flip the kli over. As long as you don't want the water, then it doesn't qualify to be makshir the kabel tumah. The only reason you flip the kli over is to show that you don't want the water. So there is no significance to the water here, as opposed to Shabbat, where we're giving significance to the kis, which is classified as hotza.
It says, alo dami alo l'seifa. That's more similar to the latter half. It's the Mishnah. It's really not the latter half of the Mishnah. It's the next Mishnah, which is areva. If you have a trough, shirad delif the tocha. You have a leak in the house, and you put a trough under there to collect the water. Water that splashes out of the trough or overflows from the trough, that water you don't want. That which is inside of it you want. Is not in the Mishnah. That the Gemara is mitayek out of the Mishnah. Clear here that the water that spills out or splashes out you don't want, but that means that the water inside you do want.
And even though the whole purpose of this trough here is to prevent the water from spreading over the house and dirtying the house, despite that fact, the fact that you left the kli upright to collect the water, gives the water significance. And the same in our case over here. The fact that you don't want the emission to come, that's fine. But you're wearing the kis, you're wearing the pouch in order to collect the emission, and that gives significance to the pouch, just like the water gains significance here, even though it's not its primary purpose, because all you're trying to do is prevent the house from being dirtied. Nevertheless, the water is chashuv, so it's over here, just like you're trying to prevent your begadim from becoming dirty, we still give chashivut or significance to the pouch that you are carrying out. And even though it's not its primary purpose, but still,
the water inside you do want. That's the same as our case over here. He wants the emission to be inside of the kis. He doesn't want it to be outside. The difference here in the Braita is a machloket Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, which we'll get to later in the Masechta, which is something called melacha she'ein tzricha legufa. When you do a melacha, when you do work on Shabbat, that melacha has a specific purpose. And if you do the work for that outcome, for that specific purpose, then you're chayav, because that's called melachet machshevet. If you do the melacha, but it does not have the same purpose as it did in the Mishkan, that's called melacha she'ein tzricha legufa. According to Rabbi Yehuda, you're chayav achatat. Melacha she'ein tzricha legufa is chayav min haTorah. And then Rabbi Shimon says, melacha she'ein tzricha legufa is chayav mi derabanan. It's only chayav midrabanan, and I'll explain it here. The reason that you're carrying the pouch out there is not because you want to carry the pouch. You're carrying the pouch for its protection against the emission coming out and soiling your bigadim. So the purpose of carrying is not to move the object from one place to another. That was the object of carrying in the Mishkan, is to take an object from here to the other location. Over here, you couldn't care less where the pouch is. Pouch is just there to protect against the soiling of the beged.
And you would have been just as happy if you didn't have an emission not to take this kis anywhere. You wouldn't have to take it at all.
So you're doing a malacha of carrying, but the carrying is not for the same purpose it was in the Mishkan, which is to move an item from one location A to location B. It's there to protect your clothing from getting soiled. In that case, it's called a malacha she'ein tzricha l'gufa. Over there, we have a machloket from Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, and I'll explain the braitot over here. One braita that says, you're chaya midoraita, that's Rabbi Yehuda. Braita that says, you're chaya midorabanan, that is Rabbi Shimon. Just to give the classic example that the Gemara gives of malacha she'ein tzricha l'gufa is if you dig a pit outside. In the Mishnah, there's an isser of charisha. There's an issue of working the land, of plowing the land, preparing land. So if you dig a pit in order to make the land usable, then you're chayav, either because of boneh, because of construction, charisha, because of plowing, whatever you do making the pit for. If you're simply digging the pit for the dirt, you want the dirt that's in the pit. That's a malacha she'ein tzricha l'gufa. Yes, you're digging a pit. You don't care about the pit. All you care about is the dirt that comes out of it. So over there, you have a malacha she'ein tzricha l'gufa. You're not doing it for the purpose that was done in the Mishkan, whether it's boneh, whether it's chavisha. You're not doing it for that purpose. You're doing it simply to get the dirt. That's a classic example of malacha she'ein tzricha l'gufa, and similar to what we have over here, we're experiencing over here with the zav. Okay, we'll stop here.